Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. President Trump continues to pile on the criticism of the late Senator John McCain during a speech at a tank factory in Lima yesterday. The president complained that he didn't receive a thank you note, or I guess a thank you, from McCain, for McCain's funeral last fall, among other things.
I endorsed him at his request, and I gave him the kind of funeral that he wanted, which as president, I had to approve. I don't care about this. I didn't get thank you. That's okay. We sent him on the way.
Now, I wasn't going to bring this up today, but we had to. It was in Ohio. We're talking about that and more national politics with the host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Welcome to March Madness.
We'll post a link to Ken's podcast at WOSU.org/allsides. Honestly, Ken.
By the way, if we're posting a link to my podcast, do we know that Ann Fisher is this week's winner of the Scuttle Button Challenge?
Everyone's just going to think it was a fix.
It's not. It wasn't fixed.
I've entered several times, but
You did. It was a randomly selected winner, and you are the winner. So I don't think we need to talk about anything else.
It was pretty exciting because I like puzzles, but I've never been very good at that. So check it out. I'm the winner, everybody. I'm the winner. I'm the greatest winner. I'm the best scuttlebutt winner of all time.
You should be president of the United States.
I could be. There's so many other things to talk about, but this is what everybody's talking about today are the remarks that the president made about Senator McCain yesterday at the tank plant in Lima. What makes this a standout moment? Do you disagree that it is one?
No, it's the front page of the papers around the newspapers around the country, which obviously the bizarre fact that this John McCain, this American hero, former U.S. senator, and of course a rival to President Trump, has been dead 7 months, and yet as Meghan McCain, I can't believe I'm quoting Meghan McCain, and I can't believe I'm quoting something she said on The View, but she did say the fact that he John McCain rents a free rent in Donald Trump's brain, and he just can't get over it. It's just remarkable, and it wasn't just what he said yesterday in Lima. All weekend long, he tweeted that John McCain is the reason why there was no repeal of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. He talked about how the so-called Steele dossier John McCain had in his possession, he handed over to the FBI and not to Donald Trump. And look, this goes back to, of course, 2015 when John McCain said that Donald Trump is inciting the crazies with his rhetoric about immigration. And Donald Trump responded that, well, he's not a hero because he was captured and he was a loser, not a hero. So this, but yet the fact is the man has been gone for 7 months. Let him rest in peace. But Donald Trump seems to be absolutely incapable of it. And while he goes on and on with these rants, he seems to think that, bad publicity is, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Right. There's another remark that he made yesterday that I didn't think got as much attention as I thought it would, and that was his regarding the GM Lordstown plant and the decision to shutter it. And he actually blamed the workers and their elected union representatives. Ohio Democratic Party Chair David Pepper called that just wrong. That he's doing GM's dirty work by shifting the blame to the union. But I'm thinking he's saying this to a room full of union members.
Yeah. Well, yes, he did. He did do that. I wish you could see my face right now. Well, maybe I don't wish you could see my face, but it's like I'm shaking my head and my eyes are wide open. Like, how is this keep happening? And yet Where is the astonishment from members of Congress, at least on the Republican side? You did see 12 Republican senators vote against the president regarding his national emergency powers. But this was a rare moment. I mean, in the attacks on McCain, you had maybe one senator, Johnny Isaacson of Georgia, who called it deplorable. Nobody else attacked the president. Everybody else, maybe a few others, defended John McCain, but nobody said the president is way out of line. Well, maybe Mitt Romney tweeted something, but that's it. And so it goes on and on and on. And I guess the feeling is that if you criticize President Trump, if you say something, you know, if you denounce him in any way, you'll pay the price during the next primary, as Jeff Flake and Bob Corker and others have learned. So they just want to stay quiet.
Some suggested that even Isaacson cloaked some compliments, the sort of thing that Donald Trump would like, in his remarks, which he seemed to, on the face of it, castigate Trump for his remarks. But he also mentioned that he's a big real estate mogul in New York City, and he's working on this great immigration reform. That he kind of packed those things in there into his remarks to dull the blow.
That's true, but it was still a blow that nobody else, I mean, it's far more than anybody else uttered. The fact that he called it deplorable, and he says, if the president is going to continue this, I will continue to talk out. Now, of course, Isaacson is not up for re-election in 2020, and I'm sure, look, it was very interesting when you think of, I mean, if you think of all these senators who were up, all the 20 Republican senators who were up next year, only one, Susan Collins, was the one who voted against the president on the national emergency plan. Everybody else, even those thought to be in jeopardy, voted with the president. I noticed that Rob Portman voted against the president, but of course, Portman is not up in 2020.
Right, exactly. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking politics today with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, and we'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org. We always like to hear from listeners. If you have a question or comment for Ken Rudin, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@WOSU.org. Now, some people have said that these remarks, this latest spate of remarks about John McCain is just camouflage. It's a distraction. The Mueller report is imminent, is due to be released in some form to somebody in the coming days, and that it's a distraction from that. What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's a distraction, because the president has been doing this kind of stuff from day one. And it wasn't even just John McCain. He was attacking a rerun of Saturday Night Live. He was saying that, you know, maybe we should look into. He said that the FCC and the Federal Election Commission, I have no idea what the Federal Election Commission has to do with Saturday Night Live or anything on television, but he said the FEC and the FCC should look into shows that criticize them. It's like Devin Nunes, the congressman from California, who's suing Twitter because of a fake Twitter account called Nunes Cow has been mocking him. So he's suing Twitter for $250 million. Meanwhile, Devin Nunes is the congressman who signed on to an anti-frivolous lawsuit legislation last year. So this is just beyond. And then he's attacking Kellyanne Conway's husband as a jerk and the worst husband ever. I would... Not that I ever want to be in the bedroom with Kellyanne Conway and George Conway ever, but it might be interesting to be there, or at least a fly on the wall, and listen to their conversations. Because I noticed yesterday she defended the president instead of her husband. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, James Carville and Mary Madeline are lovebirds compared to this.
It's exactly.
Just, wow.
Well, you know, and it is interesting. George Conway, impeccable as he's been described, impeccable conservative pedigree. He's got all the right stuff. And I'm wondering when the falling out came. What do we know about when he fell out?
Well, he was a longtime supporter.
And exactly.
Of course, President Trump says he offered him, he begged for a job and he turned him down. That's not what happened. George Conway was up for a job that he took himself out of. But I think, as Conway said, he said, look, I was a supporter. I believed in him. I certainly didn't believe in Hillary Clinton. And the more I saw Donald Trump, the more distressed I got. And so he's been talking more and more about the president's fitness for office and whether there's some kind of psychological stuff going on with Trump that the American people should be concerned about. And again, once you attack and or criticize President Trump, the president's response is relentless. Now, Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Kellyanne Conway and others have said, well, if you attack the president, you will get attacked back. But it's like he does it 10 times over and he does not let it go. So if you're an enemy of Donald Trump, you're an enemy for life. And if you say one nice thing about him, like many autocrats around the world have done, you're his BFF.
What about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, by the way? I thought she was supposed to be on her way out.
Well, I never heard that. I mean, okay. Look, everybody's supposed to be on his way out. If you listen to
none of us get out alive. Okay.
No, right, exactly. If you listen to Democrats, Donald Trump's supposed to be on his way out, and that hasn't happened either. We were waiting a year for Jeff Sessions to leave, and so I mean, look, you know, we hear these reports all the time that people are leaving, and sometimes they do. Look, there's a lot of vacancies in the president's cabinet. There are a lot of acting. I mean, boy, talk about actors. There's a lot of acting. Secretaries in the cabinet because he hasn't named people yet. And there's so many people under, you know, in administration positions that have either not only not been confirmed, but have not even been nominated. So, you know, you talk about all the new judges have been nominated and confirmed. And that is one of the great successes of this presidency. The president has put in his far more than his share of conservative federal district judges around the country. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of administrative posts that are just going unfulfilled. I mean, you have the head of the chief of staff is also the interior secretary or is this. I mean, there's so many people who are just doing several jobs at once because the jobs remain unfilled.
And by the way, I mean, the success he's had naming people to the bench, the federal bench, is a lot due to Mitch McConnell in the Senate.
Oh, not only that, not only is it due to Mitch McConnell, but it's a fact. I mean, basically, the problem is I don't want to go into the whole history, but when the Democrats started weakening the amount of votes needed to confirm judges and getting rid of the filibuster in 2013, Harry Reid did that in 2013. The Republicans have taken it to a higher level. Now you can no longer filibuster any federal judge, a U.S. Supreme Court judge, anybody in the cabinet. So it has allowed Mitch McConnell and company to confirm a record number of judges. And long after Donald Trump is gone, assuming he ever decides to leave office, voluntarily or not, his influence will be shown certainly in the federal judiciary.
Speaking of the Senate, did I read the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is putting John McCain up, wants a building to be named for him?
Yes. See, this is a controversy that has been around for a little bit. And I guess it goes back. This is not because of Trump, but it's because of reverence for John McCain. One of the Senate office buildings is named after Richard Russell. Richard Russell of Georgia, who died in 1971, I believe. 69, I think 71. 69 or 71. Anyway, he was one of the absolute giants of the Senate, one of the most influential senators in the world in Senate history. But he was a staunch segregationist. I mean, really, really staunch segregationist. And there are some people, you know, just like with the Confederate monuments around the country, there are people who said that we should not have. Look, we have the Dirksen Building. We have Phil Hart of Michigan. You know, we have the Cannon House Office Building, things like that. Mm-hmm. Rayburn House Office Building. But Richard Russell was an outspoken segregationist. So Chuck Schumer and others have talked about changing the name of the Senate building to John McCain. We'll see what happens with that.
We will take a break. My guest again, Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment for Ken, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page or contact us by Twitter at WOSU, All Sides. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is getting some pushback from her Democratic colleagues after saying she would not support impeaching President Trump without overwhelming evidence. We're talking politics this hour with political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. Ken, what about I want to talk about Democrats for a few minutes here. They're, you know, as with anything, there's schisms form a lot. There's this huge progressive sway to the caucus now. What kind of damage could be wrought against Pelosi over this?
Well, it's not so much against Pelosi, it's against the Democratic Party, because they are very aware of the possibility and the fear of overreach. That's what Republicans did in 1994 with the Clinton impeachment. Newt Gingrich probably took it to it's very difficult to impeach a president who is popular. And of course, while Donald Trump is not Bill Clinton, but there's a fear of overreach. And there are many members of the House, Democratic members of the House, who were first elected in 2018 in swing districts or even Republican districts, but their antipathy for Donald Trump elected Democrats. The last thing these centrist, moderate swing Democrats want is to have a controversial and polarizing issue of impeachment on the table, because, one, everybody knows that, you know, it's one thing for the, let's just say for argument's sake, the Democratic House can impeach the president. Well, he's not going to be removed from office in a Republican Senate.
Right.
The number of presidents who have been removed from office because of impeachment is zero in history. I mean, Nixon resigned on his own, but nobody was ever impeached and removed from office. So I think even though there are people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other progressives who are a little more impatient about the way things are done, and perhaps with the investigations into Trump, I think what Pelosi is doing makes complete sense. The fact is, right now, there's no evidence until the Mueller report comes out. We don't know what's going to happen. And so what Pelosi did made sense. It gave Democrats cover. And she said, look, first of all, she said, it's not worth my time. He's not worth the time, which I thought was a little bit too dismissive of her. But I think she's right. This is not what the Congress should be working on. And the fact is that the House Judiciary Committee, led by Jerry Nadler of New York, is still looking into all these claims and investigations into the president. And if something comes up that sounds impeachable or worth discussing impeachment, then of course she can change her mind.
Well, what might that evidence look like? I mean, what are we talking about as far as that goes?
Well,
what kind of bar?
Obviously we're talking about
the Mueller.
Well, the Mueller investigation, of course, but I mean, there's all these different charges about obstruction of justice and lying, and the Southern District in New York is looking at business deals that may have enriched Trump's family. Donald Trump Jr. is being looked at. Ivanka Trump is being looked at. There's a lot of investigations going on, as well as indications that the Mueller investigation is winding down. So look, it's a panoply of things that could just ultimately bring the president down. Of course, the polls, remarkably, in this country have not changed. I mean, even when the president goes on a rant or says something that seems embarrassing or like shocking, his supporters stay the same and the opposition stays the same. So he still has the same 43% or whatever in the country supporting him, and nothing seems to change. I think something gigantic like a Mueller bombshell, and I have no idea what it would be, that would be the only thing I could think of that would change the dynamic, Because as Donald Trump famously said in 2015, you know, I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and my supporters will stay with me. And right now, if you look at members of Congress, that seems to be the case.
If the Mueller report, the president is now saying that, hey, release the Mueller report, let everybody see it, let them judge for themselves. Is that what do you make of that strategy?
Well, he knows something. I mean, he also said, "I will testify under oath before the Mueller investigation." He said that 7,000 times, along with Mexico paying for the wall. He'll say a lot of things, and he'll be very serious about it. And then, of course, lawyers like Rudy Giuliani and others will say, "What are you out of your mind? I mean, you're going to testify under oath." So he says these things, but obviously, William Barr, the new attorney general, will make the ultimate decision of what gets released and how much of it gets released. And I suspect that Barr's desire to have everything show up without redactions is far different than what the president suggested.
The president has started to defend the Electoral College process. He was a one-time critic. He started defending it in a series of tweets this week. The change of heart comes because some progressive Democrats are saying they want to eliminate it?
Well, I mean, there have always been critics against the Electoral College.
Sure.
We certainly heard it in 2000 when George W. Bush lost the popular vote to Al Gore, and yet because of Florida's electoral votes, became the 43rd president. So, and then, of course, when Donald Trump lost the popular vote by 3 million votes or 4 million votes to Hillary Clinton, then Democrats said, wait a second, this is not working. But the argument against the Electoral College, look, Birch Bayh, the legendary liberal senator who died last week at the age of 91 from Indiana, Birch Bayh was talking about getting rid of the Electoral College for decades. I mean, he left the Senate in 1980. He was talking about it in the 1960s and the 1970s. But the feeling is that if you the objection to that is that small states like Iowa, North Carolina, they're not small states, but Nevada, New Hampshire, these are considered swing states that every presidential candidate visits because we don't know which way their electoral votes will go. If it's just a popular vote, then there's no reason to go to the small states. Everybody will go to California and Texas and New York and Florida and Ohio and things like that. So the small states would object, I think, to eliminating the Electoral College. And I kind of think that we've been hearing this argument for decades, and I'm not convinced it goes anywhere, even though Donald Trump's victory in 2016 was pretty remarkable by historical standards.
Mm. Listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking politics today with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment, get on the phone, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It's well documented that Ken would rather get calls from listeners.
Right, than animals.
Than
or
animals.
Or wheelbarrows. That's true.
Let's talk about some of those candidates running for president. I can't keep track anymore.
I found out that Sherrod Brown is the only Democrat in the country who is not running for president. So that's pretty remarkable.
Have we talked about that yet? Are you surprised?
No.
Were you surprised?
I thought that Hillary Clinton was going to pick Sherrod Brown as her running mate in 2016.
Yeah.
I'm still convinced that Sherrod Brown would be a very good running mate. I never saw him as a presidential candidate. I don't know why. There was something about his style I wasn't surprised, even though he was doing a tour of the country. And look, he certainly has far more qualifications, far more experience than many of the candidates who are running, which the number is now up to 15, like with Beto O'Rourke in the race, and likely to rise to 16 when Joe Biden gets in. I don't know, and they were talking about Stacey Abrams of Georgia possibly getting in. I guess the feeling is, one, there is no obvious front runner, which is true, unlike with Hillary Clinton in 2016. Mm-hmm. There's no obvious front runner, and so why not run? I mean, you could be the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, let alone a U.S. senator or a governor. Why not try it? So, matter of fact, on my Political Junkie show this week, I have Marianne Williamson, who's that spiritual guru, the self-help, person, and she, I mean, why not, right? I mean, why not? You know, she has money, and she's she has 2.6 million followers on Twitter, mm-hmm. which I don't know if that's a qualification for the presidency. I think you have to be 35 years old and live in the U.S. for 17 years, but not 2.6 million followers on Twitter. But still, the fact is, why not run? And we'll see what happens. The first debates come up in June. And, you know, they debates, as we know, can basically end candidacies, as President Rick Perry once told us.
What do you make of the decision by the Democrats not to have Fox host one of the debates?
I'm torn on that.
Yeah,
I really
me too.
Am because I mean, I don't know what the right answer is. Mm-hmm. I think look, the fact is that anybody who watches Fox News can get the remote and change the channel and watch these candidates on another network. So, you know, it's not that they're unable to watch them. But and Fox's argument is that, look, Chris Wallace is an eminent journalist. I think he's one of the best on television. I think he's as good as anybody since we lost Tim Russert. I mean, he asks tough questions of both parties. I think he's very well prepared. I think he's a great. But the fact is that as Jane Mayer's article in The New Yorker showed about a month ago, mm-hmm. is that Fox News, and not only just the Hannitys of the world and the Tucker Carlsons of the world, but Fox News is in bed with the Trump administration, and he feels that, you know, it's a dishonest news organization. I still think that the fact that it's the biggest cable network in the country by far, you know, it's like, what are you afraid of? But so I don't know how I feel about it, but. But it's an interesting call, and again, the Fox was offering up, you know, Brett Baer and Martha McCallum and Chris Wallace, and you know, they're hardly rabid right wingers. They're not Hannity and, right. and Jeanine Pirro and Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, they've got their journalistic chops, that's for sure. Terry in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Ann. Good morning.
My
question is about the argument that doing away with the Electoral College means that people in small states won't get to see and hear candidates personally. I'm not convinced that many people, any grand percentage of the state's population, ever see a candidate personally. And what are they going to hear and see? They're going to hear and see the same things they hear on the internet, on the web, on TV, on radio. What's the difference in this day and age?
Well, I love that question. I mean, that's a great question. You're mm-hmm. absolutely right, except for the early primary and caucus states. And I'm not talking about the general election. Even before you get to November, I'm talking about Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada and South Carolina, the first states in the process. I mean, they're probably the only states that get to see candidates up close, you know, retail politics, as we like to call it. And they're the only states that do it. It's not so much the voters who will object. I think it's the people who make, you know, the hotel industry and the restaurant industry and those who make a fortune on all the candidates and the press people who come into their states and spend time in it. So I agree with you that once you get past, you know, February and March, and not even March, because March 3rd, I think, is the California primary where all you do is just do your PR on TV and nowhere else. So the voters will not have a say. You're absolutely right. But I think the party professionals and the people with a financial investment in the candidates coming to this state would probably object to the most, and maybe the lawmakers. But you're right. The voters will never know the difference.
Thank you, Terry, for that call. Let's see. Cindy in Westerville. You're on with Ken Rudin. Hi, Cindy.
Hi there. I'd love to hear Ken's opinion of that they're interested in him calling Mayor Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend.
You're asking what I think about him?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yes, I mean, of course, the joke about him is he's Mayor Pete because nobody could pronounce Buttigieg, his last name. But you know something now, and of course, he's he's a combat veteran. He's openly gay. He's a very young mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And every time I've seen him on TV, I come away impressed. Mm-hmm. He doesn't skirt issues. He doesn't skirt questions. I mean, I want to talk about Beto O'Rourke. If we have a chance, a few seconds, mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about Beto O'Rourke because my impressions of what just happened with his announcement. But Mayor Pete is very, look, the last person who went from mayor to president was nobody. Nobody's ever done it. Matter of fact, Calvin Coolidge was the last president who was even a mayor. He was the mayor of Northampton, Massachusetts. But nobody's gone from mayor to president. But and maybe, you know, Mayor Pete is when ultimately he'll seek on other offices, maybe governor of Indiana, maybe he'll challenge for a Senate seat. But I think he's very impressive. I think he has smart ideas, and I think he's very articulate. I've watched him on not only on the news shows, but also on the late night shows, and he's one of the big surprises, I think, in this primary season.
Thanks a lot, Cindy, for that call. Let's see. Iris in North Linden, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to ask Ken if he knows of a credible challenger for Susan from the Democratic Party for Susan Collins in Maine in 2020. She's ginned up a lot of anger against herself in the Democratic base. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
That's a great question. That's one of my favorite races to watch because, you know, unlike everybody else, Susan Collins is I mean, Democrats may not agree with this, but Susan Collins is probably the most liberal Republican in the Senate. Having said that, she turned off a lot of Democrats and progressives with her defense of Brett Kavanaugh during the confirmation hearing. And basically she said, I believe Brett Kavanaugh, and maybe, you know, maybe this woman thinks what happened really happened, but you know, it's not enough to disqualify Kavanaugh. Well, the left went crazy. And so the only Democrat's name I've seen is Susan Rice, the former Obama UN ambassador who has a home in Maine, a summer home in Maine. And Susan Collins has dismissed her, say, well, you know, she only has a summer home. She's really not a Maine. She's really not a maniac. I'm sure that's not the word they use for Maine, people in Maine. But so I have not. I mean, I know the Democrats have always given her a wink and have said that she's the best Republican we could ever have. And they'll vote for her, which is what happens in Maine. I mean, they have, you know, Olympia Snowe and Bill Cohn and even Margaret Chase Smith. There are a lot of Democrats who like them. But I think Democratic patience with Susan Collins has ended. Now, I did say earlier that Susan Collins was the only Republican up for re-election next year who voted against the Trump National Emergency Plan, and she was the only one of the 20 Republicans who was seeking re-election. But I think the Kavanaugh thing, especially the way she kind of like basically completely dissed Lisa Murkowski, who I think Lisa thought that this was going to be, they were going to come in as a tandem attacking the president, but not Susan Collins and the liberals and the progressives are probably not going to forget it as we approach 2020. So Susan Rice is the only Democrat's name I've seen so far, but I'm sure if Susan Rice doesn't run, there'll be others coming forward.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment for him, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, and my guest, Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You mentioned that the approval rating for Donald Trump remains around 43%, and the point was made in a headline in the Columbus Dispatcher, it might have been even the New York Times, that, you know, he's kind of done so many things wrong for Ohio, but his approval here remains steady. I mean, you talk about the Lordstown plant, you talk about the trade wars with China. that kind of a thing. What, and now, according to the Washington Post, early polling shows that Republican voters are again more enthusiastic about the 2020 elections, which says to me they're also enthusiastic about Donald Trump.
I agree. I don't see, especially a state like Ohio, which Barack Obama carried twice, and I believe Bill Clinton carried twice, and yet, you know, and we always talked about Ohio as a swing state leaning Democratic, and now you have, I mean, if you think of what happened in 2018, a Republican sweep of the statewide races, mm-hmm. except for Sherrod Brown, of course, but Mike DeWine and everybody else, and the president's numbers are the same. I think the president is more popular than John Kasich, for example, who is probably worn out his welcome after 8 years as governor. So I just wonder what it would take for some states to say, well, look, I think there's a lot of anger. And I think the fact is that that they're still angry even after 2-3 years of President Trump in office. And the anger is that they feel that the system is stacked against them. And Donald Trump has this way of appealing to these people better than, I mean, it's different than Ronald Reagan. I mean, Ronald Reagan was one way of an anti-establishment person. But Donald Trump is everything that so many of these voters are not. He's rich. He's entitled. He has skirted the law in many ways. He's gotten away with so much stuff. And yet there's so many people who identify with him because he puts his, you know, he sticks his thumb out. He sticks his tongue out at the politics as usual. And it, again, it still works. I even wonder if Robert Mueller comes out with a really incriminating report, whether his supporters will even believe it or agree with it or think the whole thing is fake and they don't trust the Justice Department, they don't trust the FBI. I've never seen anything like it. There have always been people who, you know, run against the system. You think of these, I'm thinking of like George Wallace and other, I'm not saying it because of race, but because mm-hmm. George Wallace was just outside, he was the angry man or angry woman's candidate, and Donald Trump fits that role to perfection.
Judy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Judy.
Hello. So as Donald Trump gets more irrational, it occurs to me that maybe he wants to be removed from office because then he would be a martyr. But if he loses the election, then he would be humiliated. That's the only way I can make sense out of any of it.
Well, I don't think he wants to be removed from office. I mean, he would be the first, and I don't think that's something he wants to say. But I just wonder, you know, I remember during the 2016 campaign, I was watching, this is what my life is like, but I was watching a Trump rally in Pittsburgh the other day, and basically said that there's no way we're going to lose Pennsylvania. Now, he didn't, but he said there's no way we're going to lose Pennsylvania. And if Hillary Clinton does win, it's fixed. It's fixed, and I want all my supporters to know that it's fraudulent elections. So I just wonder, first of all, I am not convinced Trump loses in 2020. Mm-hmm. The Democrats have this knack of eating their own, and there's a big ideological battle going on between those candidates who appeal to the heart and those who could beat Trump, and not everybody's on the same page. But I'm not convinced that Trump goes quietly even if he does lose, and I'm not sure if his supporters do either. So, I mean, one, he's not going to be removed because of impeachment, because unless something incredible happens, Republicans are not going to vote to remove him. Mm-hmm. But even if he loses the election, I could just see just ugliness in this country. You know, we always talk about whether 1960 was stolen from Richard Nixon and he blamed Illinois and Texas and those kind of states. Well, he didn't, but his supporters did mm-hmm. blame it for that defeat. But there were no riots in the streets. There were no demonstrations and tearing down the buildings. I am very pessimistic about what's going to happen, not because I want the Democrats to win, but I just don't know that everybody will accept the result in a way that helps our democracy, and I just do get nervous about that.
Judy, thanks for that call. Let's see, Eric in Columbus, you're on the air. Eric, hi.
Hi. Ken, I wanted to get an idea of if you thought we've had a viable media candidate in your knowledge of presidential elections. Two, if you think Oprah would be a viable candidate. And finally, do you think Florida is in play for this presidential election? Thank you very much for letting me ask my question.
Sure. Thank you, Eric.
Well, there are a lot of good things here. First of all, the third part about Florida, that's interesting because Florida voters in 2018 passed a resolution that allowed, I think, 1.4 million people who have felony records, who had been incarcerated, who had felony records. And, you know, right now, felonies are not allowed to vote in Florida. But mm-hmm. now, because of an overwhelming vote by the citizens of Florida in 2018, they now can vote. And one would think that many of them are not, many of them would vote, you know, Democratic, one would think. And not that criminals vote Democratic, but I think given the fact that an overwhelming portion of people incarcerated and have been arrested for crimes are African-American, mm-hmm. one would think that this might be good for the Democratic Party. Having said that, there are Republicans in Florida who are trying to now talk about, there was an article, I think, in today's paper or yesterday's paper that talked about they want these people to pay a fine or a fee to vote, which sounds awful, like a poll tax.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds illegal.
It sounds illegal to me, too, and I'm sure it'll go to the courts. But basically, it seems like the Republicans in Florida are very nervous about the prospect of adding 1.4 million voters to the voting rolls who may vote against Republicans. But the fact is, look, we had two races, big high-profile races in Florida in 2018, the Senate race where Governor Rick Scott beat Bill Nelson, the senator, and the governor's race where Ron DeSantis beat Andrew Gillum, but both were by eyelash or margins. They were just tens of thousands of votes, maybe a percentage point or two. So it's definitely in play. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump himself won Florida by a very close margin in 2016. I mean, the long answer to what it should have been a short answer is, yes, I think Florida is in play. Now, regarding Oprah, well, I mean, you know, she said she's not going to run, and I was going to say that nobody wants entertainers as presidents, but the 2016 election proved me wrong on that. But I kind of think that you have such a wide variety of experiences and personalities and sex and gender and race and sexual identity in this Democratic field. I don't think you need an Oprah Winfrey to add to the thing. And what was your first part of the question?
I thought that was it.
That was one something in the first part. But yeah, so
well, it was about whether Florida was in play. And,
yeah, Florida's in play and Oprah. Yeah. But I thought there might have been something in front. But yeah,
okay. Email from John. I heard Ken and you speaking about the Electoral College. I think it needs adjusted so every vote in every state is worth the same. For example, one electoral vote in Wyoming has one electoral vote for every 200,000 people. Meanwhile, in Ohio, one electoral vote is for every 700,000 people.
Well, I don't know. I certainly. It reminds people of the unfairness of the Senate, for example. I mean, Wyoming has the same amount of vote in the Senate as California does, and that sounds, you know, you're talking about 300,000 voters compared to 10 plus million votes. So look, it's not equitable. It's obviously it's never been equitable. It seems to be. The debates over the Electoral College has been going on for mm-hmm. decades, and I just kind of think that I don't see any change because certainly if the Republicans control the Senate, they're not going to pass a constitutional amendment that theoretically could help the Democrats when a popular vote would have helped the Democrats in 2000 and 2016.
Back to the Democrats and the presidential hopefuls in the Democratic Party. A lot of them are being pressured. Well, the liberal wing is pressuring a lot of them to embrace different progressive policies, you know, Medicare for all, the
free tuition, the Green New Deal,
that kind of a thing. And I'm wondering about the timing of that. Is this good for the party? Is this the sort of stuff that's going to energize voters in a way that would affect something like that early polling from the Washington Post on enthusiasm?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, because we do know that we do know that there were a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters who were not happy with what happened in 2016. I mean, as Donna Brazile and others have pointed out, that the DN, and I don't know if I necessarily agree with this, but I mean, there are a lot of Democrats who say this, that the game was fixed for Hillary Clinton in 2016. And so I remember being at the Democratic convention in Philadelphia, and so many Sanders delegates said, I am not voting for Hillary Clinton because it was fixed. It was stolen from us. So I think there was I mean, it's good to have debates. It's good to have healthy debates. But if it's going to lead to recrimination and bad feelings, you know, just like the Goldwater thing hurt the Republican Party in 1964 and the McGovern candidacy hurt the Democrats in 72. So I don't know. But do I think it's good for the Democratic Party? I do. And that's what's. I just said something earlier, if I have 1 second, if I can say mm-hmm. this. The Beto O'Rourke thing fascinates me about this because Beto O'Rourke, you know, won everybody's affection, at least Democratic affection, when he ran against Ted Cruz mm-hmm. in 2018. He raised $80 million. He got support from all over the country. When they were talking about him running this year, he was going to be the next Obama, the next Bobby Kennedy. He was going to save the country. He was going to save the universe, you know, all that thing. And then once he gets in, well, he's an entitled white guy. He's a too centrist. He has a thin resume. He doesn't stand for anything. He doesn't answer any questions with specifics. So the Democratic Party has a lot of soul searching to do when it seems like Joe Biden is going to declare his candidacy early next month, maybe in 2 weeks or something like that. Joe Biden has a lot of stuff in his past. A lot of people think that he can beat Donald Trump. But what about his views on anti-crime measures? What about his views on school busing back in the day?
He's got a lot of history, right?
He does. What about how he treated Anita Hill during mm-hmm. the Clarence Thomas hearing? So the Democrats will have their fights, just like the Republicans had their fights in 2016. Republicans wound up winning the presidency. We'll see if the dissension in 2020 hurts the Democrats.
Well, the one thing that the Democrats lack, though, as far, in my opinion, is a Donald Trump. I mean, there is none of them. I don't see where any one person is going to garner the kind of attention that he did.
True. That's very true. We are saying this in March of 2019.
I know.
Remember,
but...
I mean, remember Jimmy who in 1975 when nobody thought Jimmy Carter could come out and do this? Right. No, really.
Yeah.
And look, Hillary Clinton was the clear front runner in 2008 until this skinny kid from Chicago came out and beat her in the primary. Mm-hmm. So we have been surprised in the past. We'll be surprised again. Right now, it looks like a free-for-all. It looks like, you know, it could be a food fight. We'll see with the first mm-hmm. debates in June.
Can't wait.
But we have a long way to go before we start, you know, burying the Democrat chances for 2020.
The money is pretty astounding. I mean, you mentioned what Beto O'Rourke raised for the Senate race against Ted Cruz. It's an astounding amount of money. And within 24 hours of announcing
$6.1 billion dollars.
I mean, it just is making me wonder, where is all this money coming from?
Well, you know, something I thought the same thing. I was wondering if with 15 Democrats in the race, there has to be a limit on how much people can spend. But maybe not. Maybe the feeling among some Democrats is that they just so angered and appalled by a Trump presidency that they will spend millions to defeat him. But then again, there's no shortage of money on the Republican side, too. The RNC is reporting record intake every month. It seems like they're breaking new records. So there's no shortage of money. And of course, if you live in a swing state like Ohio, like Iowa, like New Hampshire, I feel sorry for you because you will be bombarded by ads in November. You know, because there's no shortage of money. That's the good thing and the bad thing about being mm-hmm. in a swing state. Mm-hmm. You cannot turn on a TV in September and October without being bombarded 24/7 with pro and anti commercials. You don't see that in New York, California, and Texas because we already know how those states are going to go.
Well, I don't vote in primaries, so I don't get a lot of I don't get the mail that a lot of people get.
But you have the TV, you know, there's no such thing as a nonpartisan television. Sometimes you just turn on the TV and I mean the big stuff, of course, is all the candidates running for president mm-hmm. and that woman from Ohio who won Scuttlebutt last week. That was pretty big news.
I can't believe it. What do I get?
You get an official political junkie button worth I don't know, but it's 4 inch. It's a 4 inch button. It's gorgeous, and
I will wear it with pride.
Absolutely, I would love to see you wearing that on the radio.
I will wear it the next time we talk.
Okay,
but thank you so much for recognizing my prowess and puzzling, and thank you so much for joining us today as well, Ken Rudin.
And I love being on your program. Thank you.
Ken Rudin's host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. You can check out the podcast and all the other goodies that they have on their website at the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. That's it for our political conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.